Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 936. I think we should just jump right into the community corkboard. Is that agreeable to you, Katie Levine?
Yeah, we got two cool things.
And what do we got?
So they are both runs for charity.
Okay.
So the first one is the Enormous Elephant Run. They'll be taking place in Griffith Park in LA, Saturday, March 10th. There's going to be a 5K run, a jog, a walk, and dogs and kids are more than welcome. It's going to be a fun, relaxed run, and all the money raised will be going to the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, which is one of my favorite charities. They help save elephants and other mammals in Africa. I sponsor a little baby elephant called Malkia there.
Wow, I had no idea. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
You have a baby elephant, technically.
Well, anyone can sponsor. They have a bunch, and they send you updates. So they'll, send pictures of her and be like, this is where she was today, and this is what she was doing.
Is she, holding a note in her trunk that says, hi, Katie?
Yeah, I wish. It would make my life.
Yeah,
virtual runners are also welcome if you aren't able to make the actual race. And so for more info or to register, visit enormouselephantrun.com. The second is the 5K to rebuild wine country on Sunday, March 11th at Napa Valley College. You can come run, walk, or jog, and after join in wine tasting in a family-friendly festival. Or if you don't want to race and you just want wine, you can do that too. And virtual runners are welcome if you don't live in the area or can't make the race and still want to help. All money raised will benefit Habitat for Humanity of Sonoma County and will help rebuild homes and provide aid to those who lost their houses during the fires. For more information or to register, visit runtorebuildwinecountry.org.
Hey, the corkboard's got the runs. Hey, because the diarrhea.
Yep.
This episode is Duncan Jones, who is a pal of mine, who is just the sweetest guy and such a great director. He's great. And he has a new movie out called Mute, which is on Netflix. It is available now. When we recorded the podcast, it was like a day or two away from coming out. But now Mute is absolutely out. You should see it. Alexander Skarsgård is in it. It has a great, great, great cast. There's a lot of really great – Paul Rudd, yeah. Justin Theroux. It's fantastic. But Duncan's a great guy, and I think this is his third time on the podcast.
I think it was his second.
Second? He wasn't on a third?
I
thought he was on three times. Boy, if there was only some way we could check, there's just no way. So this is only a second time on the podcast.
Yeah, I believe so.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he came out. I think he was, he was on right before Warcraft came out.
Yeah.
So now he's on for Mute. Anyway, he's great. His Twitter handle is @manmademoon. He is, because he did the movie Moon with Sam Rockwell, which is also a great movie. So support him and love him as I do. This episode also brought to you by Squarespace. The future is coming. Whether you want it to or not, you have no control over that. You're not a Time Lord. With Squarespace, you can make it brighter. Turn your cool ideas into a new website, showcase your work, blog, or publish your content if you want to. Sell products and services of all kinds. Announce an upcoming event if you want to, or even a special project. Okay, Squarespace is going to do this by giving you beautiful templates created by world-class designers, powerful e-commerce. You can customize the look and the feel and the settings of stuff. You can optimize. Everything is optimized right out of the box. And it's a new way to buy domains and choose from over 200 extensions and analytics that help you grow in real time. There's free and secure hosting, nothing to patch or upgrade, and 24/7 award-winning customer support. Make it stand out. Stand out with a beautiful website. Check out squarespace.com for a free trial. When you're ready to launch, use the offer code ID10T to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Also, this episode is brought to you by Masterclass, which, Katie, I am very excited about my new Masterclass membership.
Yep. I knew you would.
It is insane, the people that did these Masterclasses. So basically, it's an online there's an online course structure to it, and it's taught by the tops in the fields of any number of things that you want to learn. I mean, I saw Annie Leibovitz for photography.
Yeah.
Aaron Sorkin
amazing.
For writing. Steve Martin for comedy, which is the first one that I'm going to get into. Cooking techniques from Thomas Keller. Martin Scorsese. Helen Mirren. I mean, it is insane.
They have Steph Curry teaching you basketball.
Yeah, and then it looks like there's a little community in there where you can connect with other people. So they have a new all-access pass, which allows you to unlock every class from over 30 masters, all for the price of two. Learn it. Do it. You can do anything with your free time that you want. So why not learn how to do something, master something, be taught by masters. Now, ID10T podcast listeners can get the all-access pass at masterclass.com/ID10T. Learn from the best in the world at masterclass.com/ID10T. So I highly recommend this this course program. And now let's do the ID10T podcast number 936 with Mr. Duncan Jones as Miss Katie Levine rolls the thing.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
I still want to be careful just because if people haven't seen it...
That's true.
I don't want them...
Fuck them.
I'm sitting right here.
We have had the thing before where people... Where we've... And this happened... Early on, we talk about something and people go, I fucking didn't get to... And then they get angry.
Okay,
and,
no, that's fair enough.
And so
you have a responsibility.
I think it's good to talk... we can talk around it.
Okay.
Other
movies beginning with M.
Yes. Dinner with Andre.
Metropolis, there you go.
Metropolis is good. Man of Steel.
Manhunter.
Moorcraft.
Mumford.
I tried. And Sons.
90s indie movie, Mumford.
Oh, Mumford, the movie Mumford. Yeah, the movie was great. Was that 90s?
Yeah, I think it was a 99 or something.
Holy shit. Guys, time is just rapidly escaping our grasp.
I'd say it keeps on slipping. Slipping.
Slipping?
Yeah.
Into the future.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Waits for no man.
Duncan Jones, welcome back to the podcast. Is this your third time on the podcast?
My 18th time.
It was your 18th time on the podcast. You're technically a co-host of the podcast at this point.
Yeah, you've been here more than me.
You're honored. It's been here more than Matt, that's for sure.
That's true. Yeah.
I don't even know where Matt is right now.
Yeah, who cares?
Somewhere in the glove.
Yeah.
Talk shit about your friend.
That's not shit. That's just saying, who cares? I'm wondering, who cares?
You know, I like you igniting the chemistry that you guys had when the podcast first started 8 years ago.
Yeah, it is tough. It is tough to keep that going. That fake hate.
Get to see him, yeah.
If you care about what happened to Matt, send us an email.
Yeah. Who cares? It's like the worst campaign. Who cares? It's like, no, we're saying who cares? People should care.
Text fuck Matt to 898. 98. Don't text that.
Standard text.
That might be a thing. Like, don't text that. I don't know. I might have heard that. I don't know if I'm remembering that number.
There's a hashtag
or if
now.
I invented that number. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure.
Myra 2012.
Myra, but it's good to see you. It's very good to see you.
You too.
I did get to see Mute the other night. It's fantastic. And what's great about it is, first of all, you got a Skarsgård in there.
I did.
You got a Rudd in there.
Yeah.
I didn't even recognize Justin Theroux until, like...
With the Owen Wilson wig?
Yes! It took, like, 30 minutes into the movie. My wife goes, I think that's Justin Theroux. I'm like, oh my God, you're right.
We actually called it the Owen Wilson wig.
It really...
In fact, that was when I was talking to hair and makeup. I said, "I look at this picture of Owen Wilson. Is there a wig that looks like that?" And that's what they got for Justin.
But it looks good. Like, it looks good.
Absolutely.
It doesn't look wiggy.
Yeah.
But you haven't seen the movie yet, Jonah.
No. So I'll be the barometer for the audience that hasn't seen it. Once I start feeling uncomfortable, I'm going to scratch my right temple.
Here's what's really fascinating about the movie is that it's not technically a sci-fi movie. However, it is nested in kind of a future.
Yeah,
it's like, I don't know, 30 years in the future.
Absolutely. Now there was this great quote. I remember badly paraphrasing from Philip K. Dick about Blade Runner when he first saw it for the first time, and he said, "You haven't made a science fiction film; you've made a futurist film."
Right.
And that's it's always sort of tickled in the back of my mind that, you know, there is a lot of science fiction films being made these days, but I kind of like the idea of futurist films using the future almost as a location.
Right.
So it's kind of it's a thriller, it's a noir thriller. It just happens to take place in this place called the future of Berlin.
Right, but the plot does not really have anything to do with the time period. It just is the setting.
There are elements that affect it because of the sort of the nature of the plot, but you're right. There is no kind of a, you know, technology which is required, which is kind of what the basis of the whole film is. It's not that kind of movie.
Okay, so just without getting too spoilery, just some context. In your mind, as the man who created this world, what has happened in the world where it feels like something very military has happened, and there's some type of something has happened 30 years in the future, yeah. And Berlin is kind of its own thing, and there are Americans in Berlin, but it seems like some people are trying to get out.
Well, it's kind of where the world is right now, but just pushed a little further. I mean, 2015, 2016, Angela Merkel, the leader of Germany, was criticized by a lot of Germans, especially those on the kind of right side of the politics, for allowing too many immigrants to come into the country. In fact, 1 million immigrants came to the country in that year. And in my kind of futurizing of Berlin, my idea was that there was a kind of quite a shift to the right off the back of that. And the politicians of the right wing basically said, we want to invite all those of any kind of Germanic ancestry, anyone who considers themselves to be pure or true Germans, to come back to the homeland, bring back your traditions, bring back, you know, what makes you real Germans. And various communities, including some segments of the Amish community,
right,
come back to Europe, come back to Switzerland and to Germany and to you know, that part of Europe, and kind of, now you end up with this Amish community that's back in Germany. And that's kind of where Leo, our hero, comes from.
Yeah, and again, it's really fascinating to hear that backstory, but it is not it's not part of the central plot, per se.
It's just
setting. It's just backstory
and setting. That's just where we are.
Yeah. And so I like to imagine, because Alexander Skarsgård is mute in the film, as is the title, Mute.
Yeah.
That you still made him audition and just made him walk around the room and pick things up. And I'm sure you just offered it to him.
Tell me a story from your childhood without words.
No words. With zero words. And
there was a lot of scribbling involved.
But he was really great. I mean,
no, he was.
He's such a fantastic actor.
He really is. And I'd seen him in Generation Kill. Where I kind of, he was a very different role, but I couldn't help thinking, wow, this guy's really both intense and talented and tall. He's very tall.
He's incredibly tall.
He's very tall. And for this role, I needed a tall man who was very talented at acting.
Yeah, and also I think I spotted a Stellan Skarsgård in there, just like a half a second, maybe. No. I thought I saw his dad in the background somewhere. No,
but you saw Dominic Monaghan.
I saw Monaghan was amazing. I spotted a Rob Kaczynski. I also spotted.
There's a Sam Rockwell.
There was a Sam Rockwell, hey, nice. Peppered around, and Lydia was like, "Oh, I recognize that guy." And I go, oh my God, he played Mickey on Doctor Who.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Noel Clark.
Yes. Yeah. So it's the cast is fantastic, and it's just and this really feels like it was a very. I know you were excited about making this for a long time, and we had sort of talked about it. I think maybe you had sort of hinted around that you were going to work on this the last time we talked.
Yeah,
which I think around the Warcraft.
That's right. No, I mean, I think I was, you know, I had been banged in the head so many times by Warcraft, I kind of didn't know where I was. But after every film, I always think I'm doing Mute next.
Right.
This time it actually happened. You know, I've been Mike Johnson, my writing partner, and I wrote this 16 years ago.
Oh my God.
Oh shit.
And had been trying to sort of work out how we were going to get it made. And we tried different avenues. We tried through the studios, and we were going to do a graphic novel, and we tried to do an animation, and we really tried just about everything. And it finally came together because of the mighty Netflix, who decided that as dark and weird as the subject matter was, there was enough interesting ideas, and, you know, I'd managed to put this really kind of unique and great cast together, that they would take a shot on it.
God, it's so... That's amazing. I mean, I really kind of want to deep dive a little bit and talk about the 16-year idea, because I often complain about how long television takes, but film is like by an order of magnitude over television in terms of how long something can percolate, how many stops and starts. So how, and this is for people listening who might think, oh, no one's ever going to make this idea that I have.
Yeah.
How do you maintain, first of all, the integrity of the project? How do you maintain your passion for the project? And as you have 16 years in your life, you change.
Oh, massively.
So it's like, how do you kind of keep it all intact with that much time and that many events?
Well, the truth is there have probably been, you know, a handful of other projects which have just fallen away over those 16 years that I just either haven't cared as much about or have just ceased to be as relevant, or just weren't appropriate, didn't feel like the right things to make anymore. But this one always did, and I think, you know, when you write, and I'm sure you know this, you know, coming up with something which at least feels to you to be an original idea is kind of rare treasure.
Right.
And if you really, for me at least, there was something about Mute that felt really unique. And the more time that passed, the more I felt like nothing else was coming out that was like it, which kind of just reinforced that idea that actually there's something kind of special about this. On a personal level also, there were subtext to the story, which actually just became more and more, you know, personal to me as time went on. Parenthood kind of runs through this films in different guises. I became a parent. My dad died. Then the woman who raised me died. So it's just over the last few years, it just became more and more, you know, there is a way to tell this story, which is going to be both hopefully entertaining for an audience, but also a personal tribute to the people who affected me growing up.
And it's incredible that all these events took place that it just sort of, you were in the right place to tell the story in this way. It would have been 16 years ago. It probably would have been
It would have been a really bad, it would have been a kind of a crummy film.
Not that it's not, obviously not that it's good when we lose
people. I would have been the mute guy. And my roommates would have been Cactus and Duck.
You know, like all of the future hover cars, you'd just be like your hands going, yeah.
Me in a Matchbox car. Yeah.
And, you know, and again, not, I mean, obviously not as someone who's, we, actually everyone here has lost a dad, but the idea that, you know, that you're able to...
They're with the socks.
Yeah.
The socks and the dads are all... Yeah. The lost socks and the dads are all together.
So where all the dads are, there's like a billion right socks. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
We should have checked the fucking dryer lid thing.
But the idea of being able to channel that energy, you know, is also must be incredibly therapeutic as well.
Yeah. No, it really was. For those who are cameo spotters in the movie, there's a picture of me with my mustache shaved off with a big bushy beard holding a little baby, and that's me with my son, you know, doing an Amish impersonation. So
right.
I'm Alexander Skarsgård's dad.
Oh, yes. Nice. Excellent.
So that's me and my son. So it felt like the right thing to do.
And how's fatherhood so far?
Oh my God, it's so tiring. My wife's pregnant. We have our daughter is due in April.
Oh my gosh.
So she's like round like a pie.
Oh my gosh.
And my son is insane.
Well, it must have been great. You went back for seconds.
Yes, that's true. I was trying to get it right this time. But no, it's amazing. It's amazing being a dad. And but man, oh man, is it tiring.
Yeah. And so how are you balancing? Did that change the way that you write? Because obviously, you know, you have to stick to a certain schedule that is probably tied to whatever the schedule of your child is.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think, you know, I have an incredibly generous and willing to go with it wife who, you know, we actually flew out to Berlin when my son was 4 months old to go and shoot Mute. So her and the baby came with us, and it was night feeds and diaper changing, you know, between takes and it was really tiring. I don't recommend it. I don't recommend making a movie when you have a newborn.
I mean, newborn parent brain, I think, is probably hard enough to navigate if you're just like trying to get coffee in the morning. But I can imagine having to be in a place where you really, as a co-writer and a director, really have to have all the answers about everything that's going on in your movie at all times.
Yeah, sometimes the wrong things come out, you know. just wipe his butt.
And Alexander Skarsgård's like, why is someone wiping my butt?
And Paul Rudd's like, just shut up and let's go with it.
Yeah, go with it. He's method.
I also got to say, Paul Rudd, you know, not that you forget what a great actor he is, but he does so many comedic roles.
Yeah.
But to see him... like really is just kind of a straight character.
Yeah,
he's not fucking fun? Fantastic.
He's so good in this, and I mean him and Justin also, who took on an awesome responsibility with this role because it's a really hard one for anyone.
Yeah.
But Paul was absolutely amazing, and Paul and Justin I cast as a pair because I really needed the sense of the friendship that those two guys needed to have, the characters in the film, it needed to feel really believable. So it was almost like you're casting, you know, a lead and his or her romantic interest.
Right.
It was, you had to have that chemistry. But they're both so smart and so funny, and they're both writers in their own right. And they knew what I wanted, which was basically, you know, I wanted Elliot Gould and Donald Sutherland back when they did MASH.
Right.
And I wanted those guys, but, you know, I had to do Justin Theroux and Paul Rudd.
Is that why you did the facial
and the Hawaiian
hair?
Shirts.
Oh, that's so great. Fantastic.
That's amazing.
And if you listen, if you watch it again and you listen, you'll actually hear some lines from MASH, kind of just sort of, you know, slightly paraphrased that Paul, you know, riffs off in the movie.
That's amazing.
That is terrific. I mean, and that is, again, you know, for anyone who's creating anything, it's sort of the DNA of what inspires us are things that we are just tucked in our head,
mm-hmm.
you know, for years and years and years that you can pay homage to, the tribute to, and if no one ever noticed, it still works.
It still works. Absolutely. Absolutely. No, it's there for the geeks like us, but you know, I fell in love with MASH when I was a kid, and it's still my favorite comedy. I mean, it's my absolute favorite comedy. But the beauty of Trapper John and Hawkeye Pierce is that as funny as engaging and as fun as those two guys are to watch, you can't help but think, wow, they're kind of mean.
Those are some mean
people.
But you excuse it because they're in war.
Of course.
And so you're
but
like,
take
oh,
them out of war and make them just a little bit meaner.
Dickhead.
And that's Cactus and Dog.
I don't know if you got this in England where you were, but MASH had some interesting spin-offs. And there was a spin-off called Trapper John MD was just a straight-ahead dramatic medical procedural.
That's right, yeah. Did they use the same actor
for
the TV show? No, it was just...
No, it was like, they used a guy named Pernell Roberts, like this bald dude with a beard. And it had nothing to do with MASH. I don't think they ever referenced MASH. It was
weird.
The show was just called Trapper John MD. It was a huge hit, and it was just a fucking procedural medical drama. Yeah. That was literally it. Not a hint of comedy.
The theme song was Suicide is Painful. It was like just little tweaks.
Well played. Really well played.
We should do a Radar show. Right? Oh. And he just says everything before anyone says it to him.
Yes.
So the dialogue is just him talking
for
everyone.
I'm actually surprised there was never a Klinger spinoff.
Yeah, that would work.
Klinger seemed like you would need a Klinger. There would be, was Klinger in the movie? Was he in the movie? Was there a Klinger in the movie or did they add him for the TV show?
You're talking about MASH.
MASH.
You're not talking about Mute.
I'm not
There's
talking
no
about
Mute.
Did you add Klinger?
Although there is...
yeah, you're totally right.
There is Sheehan.
Yes.
Who's absolutely amazing
yes.
as this character, Luba. I don't want to spoil that, though.
No, I don't want to spoil that either, but there is a...
There is a Jessica Rabbit cameo.
Yes, that I definitely caught. The Jessica Rabbit cameo, I definitely caught.
People are like, what the hell is this movie they're talking about?
No, but that's, you know, on such a great level, it's just those little unspoken touches that even if someone didn't know that was a Jessica Rabbit reference, there's something about it that just sort of rings... something of substance, even if someone doesn't know exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And also just the idea that you get to make this thing and essentially just populate it with your friends too. It's like, hey, I got a thing for you, a thing for you. Because again, Don McMonaghan was...
His cameo was pretty crazy.
Fantastic.
And he flew in, shot with us for a few hours and then flew out the next morning.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah. And he'd just come from one of these crazy retreats out in South America or something where he'd been eating nothing but maggots or something. I don't know what he was doing.
Like that.
Cleaning his soul. And he arrived and we stuck him in this amazing makeup and wardrobe and put him in a room with a bunch of, sex robots and told him to act.
Which definitely the one thing I was actually going to send you
you need that sex robot for this house.
We need a sex
just
robot for
this
house.
Just the corners of the room.
You know what? I was going to put a fleshlight in the Dalek, just like in the stock, just in the eye stock. Put a fleshlight in the eye stock. What are you doing?
spit take.
Spit take. Yeah, but also. You've introduced this idea that not only is fascinating to me, but I definitely see as, you know, as futurism really takes hold, and this isn't a spoiler, but it's just a fun touch, but robo-strippers. Robo-strippers are, it's such a brilliant touch because when you see it, you go, oh my God, I totally could... Absolutely.
I mean, we actually tried originally to build it practically. Because we thought, well, you know, what is it really? Other than like one of those toys where you stick your thumb and it's, you know, underneath it and all the limbs go limp. It's like a giant one of those spinning.
Yeah.
So we it didn't work out well.
I would love to see the camera and the test for them.
We're going to get a thumb big enough to push up.
The stripper bot.
But so we ended up using CG for that. But after we finished the film, we saw there was an article about one that has actually been developed. So there is a real version of that now.
I'm surprised that it's not more.
Yeah.
I think that's what's going to cause the robot uprising. I think it's like you know, we're using
demeaned.
Yes, we're demeaning them, or like, you know, we have a robot toilet in the house, you know, where it lights up and it has the little thing, and eventually the robots are going to be like, enough is enough. Like when the AI
would be cruel, giving that sentience.
Yeah, that's
the meanest Asimov story I've ever heard of.
I know, but I just need the robot to know that I'm shitting into it. I just need it to know. Yeah. I just want it to react. Is that so wrong?
They've been programmed to like it.
Come on. I did not have a choice. But yeah, and then it becomes Westworld. Then it ultimately just becomes becomes Westworld. But do you is this a genre that you will you continue this type of storytelling where you're this kind of futurism storytelling, or was this just
I've got one more in the bag that I really want to make, which basically complete the three-part anthology between Moon Mute and this third film, and it's more action based, it's kind of a bigger film, and that would kind of close it out. And then I do want to do some other things that are maybe not quite so much sci-fi.
Yeah,
but you know, we'll see.
Great. Do you have a name for your trilogy? You know, it's like, you know, the
Cornetto?
Yeah, like the Cornetto trilogy. Like Edgar and Simon's like, oh, that just jokingly became the Cornetto trilogy. Is there a...
I don't know. I have to come up with something witty, which is... Which would be even better than Cornetto.
The Robo Stripper trilogy. The Robos.
There's no Robo Strippers in Moon.
No, but it's like, but it evolves. There were no Cornettos in the Cornetto
trilogy. By the end of the podcast,
there are. By the end of the podcast, we're going to come up with it.
Yeah, we'll have it.
All right. We're going to make it work. You call it the. You're wearing a stocking cap right now.
Oh, yeah. Is that the name?
Could be the Stocking Cap Trilogy. It could be the...
We're really grasping for straws.
Yeah. Wait! Grasping for straws! Times three! So are you
only available on Netflix Trilogy!
Yeah. Well, if you put Rockwell in the next one...
Oh, yeah.
Then it could just be the Rockwell Trilogy.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The three bells.
Yeah, the three billboards of Sam Rockwell.
Oh, yeah.
Shit. Oh, my God. So are you already writing the next one?
No, it's done. After Source Code, I wrote it, and we tried to get it made, and we were really struggling at the time. But I kind of feel like the terrain has shifted a little bit since we tried to do it. It stars these two sisters from the north of England, and it was kind of great. It was an action sort of road movie starring these two women, and back then it was much more difficult to make. I really feel like maybe it would be easier now with what's going on, but we'll see. We're going to try.
Great. And when you sell a movie to Netflix, do they have any sort of a... Because I've heard that they're sort of notoriously radio silent on how anything really does or what's going on. Which I'm sure can be kind of maddening when you kind of know, like, anyone see this? Where the fuck? You know, I mean, do they have any expectations when you deliver something? They just go, thanks.
I'm just going to be like, you know, Rocky and the, you know, Stallone in the original Rocky. I'm just going to run up the stairs and say, we won! Yeah. We won at movies! We did the best! Well, who's gonna say no?
One. No. Oh my God, that's not a bad... Who could stop you?
Exactly.
No one. You could just start saying,
it's
like,
the
yeah.
best making movie ever.
50 million watched it. Yeah. 50 million what?
Exactly.
50 million. I mean, does that, you know, so
I know what you mean though. I mean, I think there's, you know what, the stats on how the film does doesn't bother me that much. What does is theatrical experience of having a big crowd being able to go see it together.
Yeah,
I miss that, but it's, you know, it's fair enough. It's a, you know, I got to make the movie. I wouldn't have got to make it otherwise.
But weren't they going
to
do something?
And no DVDs, no Blu-rays.
That's
that
right.
Kills me.
Yeah, no
that
commentary.
You can't own a movie and put it on your shelf.
Oh, shit.
That drives me crazy.
That's what I hate. But like, I like that idea of just like having a thing. I made
but
the
we
thing.
Got around that one.
Oh, yeah.
We've started telling fans, or I've started requesting from fans to actually make fake DVD covers So if you'd have your own, you know, you have your own case, you put your own cover in there, and then you've got your own version of Mute on the shelf, and if you want to watch it, you just go on Netflix.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. It's an empty case with a, like a download code for Netflix, basically. Yeah. But like I heard that Netflix, and they did it for when the weekend Mystery Science Theater came out, that they were playing the first episode in IPIC theaters. And I'm not sure if that's something they were going to continue to do, where they would do one weekend where you could go to an IPIC.
We've got like, I think it's an IPIC as well. We've got, and it's, I think it's one theater here in LA.
Yeah, that's the one in Pasadena or something like that.
Yeah, and then we've got in the UK, actually, they've got a whole chain. There's a place called the Curzon, and it's very nice theaters, and they're going to be playing it in the UK at all the Curzons. I think Netflix has a deal with them.
Yeah, they should do that more, at least for a weekend.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear about this, because the juxtaposition of the two films that you made back-to-back are so, I would imagine, wildly different experiences.
It's a good double feature, though, I think.
I think
it would be.
So you make this, you know, this big-budget film for a studio that's going into theaters, and then you make this movie for Netflix, which... Again, as we said...
Oh, you mean that one? Sorry. Yeah.
Or did you...
I thought you meant Moon and Mute, which would be a great double feature.
That would be a great double feature.
But you're talking about
Warcraft and then this, where, you know, Warcraft, I imagine, you know, there's a ton of pressure. Like, oh, people care about box offices, and I got to do this, and everyone's paying attention. Yeah. And the Netflix thing...
What about the toys?
Yeah, exactly.
What about the toys?
You got to redesign the character. The plastic can't...
And also, with Warcraft... You know, you're also you have a tremendous responsibility to the Blizzard community as well.
Yeah, the world of Warcraft.
And that's right, if you will. And this Alliance, Horde, Alliance. You never pick a side, right?
Yeah, I was Horde.
Okay, so so you and then I'm Mute, which is, you know, it's totally your own thing. It's a totally invented thing, not based on anything else.
Yeah.
So what were some of the differences and pros and cons of both of those experiences?
Well, I mean, there is, I don't know. Warcraft was 3.5 years of a lot of stress and fighting. There was, just because of the sheer mass of different parties who all had a completely justifiable right to have input and say into what it was we were making. But there were too many of them, and there were too many different perspectives. You know, we started the film when Legendary was at Warner Brothers. As we began the film, they left Warner Brothers and moved to Universal. Then they got bought out by Wanda, this Chinese company.
Right.
We lost a bunch of executives and producers while we were making the film. You know, at all the time, Blizzard is sort of saying what they needed the film to be, because the game makes over $1 billion a year for them, so the movie is small potatoes. I mean, it's
crazy.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's just it was a very difficult juggling act to keep everyone happy, and you know, I'm both myself and Chris Metzen, I know, were both proud of the film that we ended up making, and I think if anyone knew the what we went through to make it, I think everyone would be pretty impressed.
Yeah, I really do. I hosted BlizzCon again last year, and I just love. I love that community. It's just such a wonderfully passionate and also, you know, I think for people who aren't as familiar with, and they think of, you know, like MMOs or whatever, they sort of go, isn't everyone like super mean and toxic? Like, yeah, those people are out there. But the people who show up to BlizzCon, they're really good people. Like, you really see such greatness in the community. And the cosplay and just the level of detail and the passion of it. It's a really great event. I really love it.
It's fantastic. I love BlizzCon. I was obviously going a lot in the build-up to Warcraft, and I haven't been since, but not because I didn't want to, just because life got busy. But I would really like to go back and try and sneak in a little bit and just kind of experience it back as I did when I was just playing Warcraft. I heard that... for the real geeks out there, Warcraft 3, the real-time strategy game, I heard that they might actually be revamping that right now. So
interesting.
That's news on the interweb.
Interesting.
Hot scoop.
Well, I know that they, you know, last year, didn't they announce they were firing up an old server, like an old Warcraft?
Oh, really? Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
But I wanted, but what Chris was going at earlier, just like going from such a like so many eyes on a thing to, and it reminds me kind of when I can't remember the director's name offhand, but he went from doing Pete's Dragon, then like right like the week after he started shooting A Ghost Story.
Oh yeah,
and like he just wanted to kind of go like he's like this thing everyone's paying attention to Pete's Dragon. I just want to go and make this movie now.
It was definitely a palate cleanser. I mean, I think going from that Warcraft experience and the studio politics of it to this film, which I already knew back to front in my head, and Netflix were willing to just let me go away and make it and never see me again until I delivered the film. That was an amazing, you know, it almost felt like two different jobs, you know, as far as what filmmaking
that feels like
be.
It could be scary though too, because I always feel like I need just a little bit of direction from like, what is it that you, because then it just feels, you know, Are you burdened by infinite choice where you could literally do anything you want? So how do you know?
No, because you've already agreed to the script. You've already nailed down the budget. So you know you've agreed to the budget.
Right.
You've agreed on cast. So really, it's just, you know, that's kind of your job. Is at that point as a writer director, it's I'm going to deliver the film which we've all been discussing, and you're going to give me the money to do it, and you trust me to go do that. So that's what I do.
Did it feel more akin to Moon
totally.
In that way?
Very much so. Yeah. No, it was really nice to sort of go back to that experience of me and just the core people making the film, being the ones calling the shots and making the decisions.
Yeah.
Do you think you'd want to go back to making a massive budget theatrical movie again, or does this feel nice?
I don't know. I think for the right project I would do it. I feel like I'm a hell of a lot wiser now than I was, you know, before I started Warcraft.
Right.
I mean, I'd done Source Code, which was kind of a halfway house because it was a smaller studio and Mark Gordon's company, and Jake Gyllenhaal was a big star and I was working with him, and I kind of got a sense of it, and that one kind of worked pretty well, kind of the way I was hoping it would work. And then Warcraft was a very different experience, but I kind of feel like Warcraft is probably as bad as it can get as far as the politics of it.
Sure.
And I kind of feel like under the right conditions it wouldn't necessarily be like that, and maybe it could be more like the Source Code experience.
Right. If you like, would you think, oh hey, it'd be fun to do a Star Wars film in the Star Wars universe or a Marvel film? Or
I don't think I'd want to do a Star Wars, and I didn't grow up with Marvel and DC, you know, quite as much as, you know, I'm not American.
Right.
So
what?
2000
what? Out! How the fuck did you get in here? I thought they put a wall out there.
Chris, why are you bringing this trash in here?
I don't know. I thought he was your friend.
No!
Shit. I'm sorry.
Just wait. Didn't you say you just went to college in Ohio?
Hit that ice button.
Jesus Christ. They just like smash through the windows. Duncan just disappears. Like, what the fuck?
Enjoy your burrito.
And I just, yeah, that's right there. Like, yeah, that's like, fucked up. But
yeah, this isn't a podcast at all.
Yeah. No, this is just going straight to the immigration. So
2080 is what I was going to say. There's this amazing, you probably are familiar with it, but that there's this British comic book sort of compendium anthology called 2000 AD, where the character Judge Dredd came from. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of other amazing characters from that comic which have never seen the light of day as far as film or TV goes. The trick is obviously, how do you get one of those made when no one's heard of the characters? But no one had forgive me, I would say no one had heard of the Guardians of the Galaxy other than a few people who were big comic fans, or Ant-Man, or there's a lot
or
of
or Deadpool,
them.
Really.
Right,
I mean,
right.
Deadpool was
small.
You know, and what I think the last few years have proved is that people don't necessarily need to see things they already recognize. They just need to see good
stuff.
See
if they're cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, where the director had a very strong point of view and was allowed to sort of express that.
And I won't name names, but I know that there's a few of us British directors who would love to get our hands on some 2000 AD stuff.
Mm. You, Attenborough.
Yeah, that's right. David Lean. Hitchcock. Charlie Chaplin. Yeah, there's a lot of us.
I bet Hitchcock would make a fucking amazing superhero movie. And if he was still alive, I bet he would do it. Like, if he just magically were still alive, I bet he would do it, because it seems...
Well, he made Psycho because it was a best-selling book, right?
Right, yeah. Right.
And he wanted to make something that wasn't so highbrow. He just wanted to make something, like, for the audience as much as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, this idea that... Because again, I was talking about it yesterday with someone, where you know, a horror, like the horror genre just doesn't really get a lot of love.
Yeah.
And of course this year Get Out got nominated, but, yeah. but, you know, but I do feel like the industry is quick to tack the word thriller yeah. on with stuff because it doesn't sound like horror because horror yeah. is like a dirty word.
Yeah.
But, you know, but there are a lot of examples of horror films that were beautiful pieces of art that should be yeah. celebrated in film. Would you ever, is horror anything you'd ever want to do?
I'm not sure. I mean, I guess Mute gets a little horrible at times.
Sure.
I mean, not horrible as in bad, horrible as in kind of gory and,
right.
you know, and twisted. So I kind of, I guess I don't mind making things like that. I don't know if I would want to seep myself into that as the entire reason for the film's being.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'd say Moon has, like when he finds out, like when he sees the room full of him, yeah, like that's a pretty little, like horrifying moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to cheer myself up these days. I'm trying to stay on the optimistic side of the track.
No, you dig down deep and you make it hurt
hate
worse.
Hate yourself.
Yeah. So you would destroy everything that's good.
Yeah. And ruin everyone around you. Make sure no one has a good time.
I mean, again, it might be to do with fatherhood. It might be to be where I am in my life right now. But I really want to make something positive.
Yeah.
I would love to find a way. You know, one of the films which it's not a criticism of the film itself, but of what I was expecting and hoping was Tomorrowland.
Mm-hmm.
I really was like, oh my God, they're going to make like a kick-ass, optimistic, the world could be great movie, and that's what Tomorrowland's going to be.
Right.
And it was not. Yeah. It was the antithesis of that. And I still think, God, yeah, I would love to go see a movie where I'm coming out of it thinking, wow, wouldn't it be great if the world were like that?
Right. Yeah. Right.
I'd love to see that movie.
I think you could make that movie. You need to make that happen.
I would like that. Honestly, that's where my head's at these days is how do I make a movie where you just feel totally excited and happy about the world
yeah.
and what it could be.
So when you said you didn't want to make a Star Wars movie, is there a particular reason? It just
that. No,
New Hope.
No, I'm doing a screening here in LA with a screening of Mute and a Q&A with Ryan Johnson tomorrow.
Nice.
So, you know, I want to talk to him as much as he's going to be asking me questions. I'm going to try and throw a few questions at him about Star Wars and why he chose to do it and what made him want to do a Star Wars movie, because I'm curious about that.
Yeah, it seems like if someone just said, "Hey, do you want to do a Star Wars movie?" I think it would be probably equally sure and oh my God, no.
Yeah.
Because it
yeah.
just there's so much weight to it, mm-hmm, and yeah. There's just so much attached yeah. to yeah. it.
That how could even not, be your story?
It
at
could
that point.
Never. Yeah, it can't. Yeah. It can't be your story. And then you know, seeing what happened was like with you know getting trolled, getting the rating trolled, and everything. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
is this really worth that? Like, is it really worth it to yeah. take it to that extreme? I don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know either.
But I doubt that anyone's going to ever call to ask me to direct a Star Wars movie because I've never directed anything, so I feel like I'm safe.
You never know.
I feel like I'm yeah. safe from that.
They're thinking outside the box all the time.
That's true. And yeah. you are kind of taking over the planet, Chris.
Yeah. I mean...
And they asked that kid that was in the Andy Griffith Show to direct one of those.
Yeah, so it's like, they're not asking anybody. Yeah. They're not asking anybody. That was nice. Yeah. That was really nicely done.
Thank you so much. Right there. That's really why I'm here.
Hey, what's next? Patsy's gonna direct the... Hey, what's hey, next? Fonzie's gonna make a Terminator movie?
Hold on.
Actually, hang on. He has the leather jacket.
He already has leather jacket.
These are good ideas.
These are good ideas.
These are all good
Take
ideas.
Take this out of the podcast. This is ours.
Sorry, stop me for being... Forgive me for being the dummy here, but Henry Winkler has directed quite a few things, right?
I think a lot of TV, right?
I think he's directed a lot of TV.
So yeah. we could actually end up with more of the cast of Happy Days doing Star Wars movies.
Very good point.
That is not a bad idea. Ron Howard, by the way, like the fucking nicest guy in the world.
Mm-hmm.
He's so nice.
Yeah.
Where he was at a thing last night, and he was taking a picture, and I just said, "Do you mind if I photobomb you?" And he goes, "Sure, what do you want to do?" And I go, "Well, I'll just get behind you." He goes, "Okay." And he immediately understood what I was asking and just looked very seriously in the camera, and I got... And he had no... ego or pretense about it. He had no. Yeah. He was just so nice.
That's great.
It makes me love him even more.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you gotta be pretty cool if your brother's Clint Howard.
I mean, come on. Yeah. Do you think he makes an appearance in the Solo movie?
He fucking better. Clint Howard has to be in every single Ron Howard movie.
As a baby Wookiee or something?
No. As just like a pilot guy that gets killed, maybe. I don't know.
But wait a minute, though. Clint Howard was Chaka, right? In Land of the Lost.
He was?
That's the rumor. I thought, Katie, look that up. I feel like Clint Howard played Chaka, which, kind of a Wookiee.
Kind of a Wookiee. But it's reptilian is Chaka. Chaka's reptilian.
No, no, no. Chaka was a, like a hominid creature.
What were the reptilian?
Sleestaks.
Sleestaks.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming by for our conversation, Duncan.
Did you get any of this stuff in England? Did you get Land of the Lost in England?
It's fascinating to watch the way nerds will sometimes discuss things. If you listen carefully, you might be able to make out the odd word or two.
See, your accent makes you an automatic narrator to any situation. Yeah.
You can narrate. Just invite me in. I'll read anything and everything.
Do you ever thought about... What, did you find it?
It's like it's a rumor.
God damn it. Come on, internet. You can make anything else true. Just make this true for me. Just make Clint Howard Chaka. I always thought he was Chaka. Oh, well. My worldview. Like what?
People said that, like I said, there's rumors.
Oh, it's just insulting. That's all it is.
Stop it.
And what is truth anyway these days?
Right? Well, we can all say right. it. Make
what
sure.
Whatever you want it to
Let's
be.
Let's explore this idea because I have been thinking about it a lot. And yeah. it does kind of bend my mind when I think about... The idea of truth and reality being so malleable
and arbitrary
in
a day-to-day basis,
and subjectivity as objectivity, and opinion as fact, and the internet being able to take you down algorithmically any hole and convince you that whatever you think is reality. So if that is the case, and reality is just this, you know, a series of events that are plotted on the passage of time, and we experience those and perceive those, it almost feels to me like there are as many fucking realities as there are avatars.
I think the problem is most of your day-to-day decisions don't really require you to have that many facts.
No, they don't.
So, you know, if I have a cheeseburger today, I don't need to know who's, you know, what country this is or, you know, who's president or anything like that. So I could just make all that crap up for myself and I can still function.
Right. Yeah. But I think it's, I think that our brains are not evolved to handle the amount of information that we are throwing at it.
Words hard.
thoughts not stay. Thoughts fall. Yeah. Out.
You make us strong.
Chaka. Clint Howard, Chaka. Yeah, but
make it so.
But it is. You son of a bitch. It's not even the same. But it is scary in that sense that, you know, two people can have wildly different experiences around the same thing, and it's very difficult to even source what's real information anymore. Or, you know, even if you go one or two layers deep on something, that still might not be not only the whole story or even the actual story. Yeah. So,
and you can get lost in it really fast.
Absolutely.
Too.
So
you can see something, you can see footage of something, and you say, "Well, that happened," and someone will go, "Well, what actually happened?" Yeah. And it's like there's just a you know, 17 blog posts about what actually happened. And he's like, no, but I saw it. Yeah. And then you start to second guess yourself. And then you put your head in the sand and just wait for it all to blow over.
Are you avoiding news and stuff as much as possible? Or do you
No, actually, you know what? I've been getting a little bit better, but I used to be a news junkie. So I would spend way too much time. I mean, as my alternative to listening to music was just having the news on in the background.
That's no good for a new dad.
I know. It really is. I think the whole dad thing has been absolutely changing my behavior in that way.
That's good though, because if you were burdened, whether or not you realize it, you would definitely pass that would emotionally trickle down to your kids. Yeah.
But
whether
Twitter is still the devil.
Oh, yeah. God. It's rough.
I am way too addicted to that, and that needs to change, but I haven't quite broken the habit yet.
I tried getting off and there was withdrawals.
Yeah.
It's like there's a weird disconnect that you
feel. It's like, wait a second. Nobody knows what I'm thinking.
Yeah. I don't know what anyone else is thinking.
It's like, wait
Where
a second.
Are my friends?
People don't need to know what you're thinking.
I'm not connected. You know, I've every once in a while, I'll just, Lydia and I will just look at ranch properties just for fun.
Yeah.
Like, just look at them and go, oh, you know, I said to her the other day, like, I totally get it. Like, like a farmhouse in the middle of somewhere, you grow your own vegetables.
Oh, yeah.
Do your and just cut off from everything.
Yeah.
And she goes, you say that. And you, she was like, in 3 hours, you'd be like, I got to get back to this.
Does Whole Foods have internet? I just got to go pick up some
Town real quick.
Hey, they got them drones yet?
Yeah. The coffee shop has Wi-Fi. I'll just be there for the rest of the week.
I bought it, so it'll stay open 24 hours. Yeah, I just bought it. Yeah, it's not that expensive.
Big gap in customers.
It's not that expensive. Do you have a place that you go and kind of unplug and relax?
No.
I envision that you one. Might at some point.
I think we're going to need to do that. Right now, where I live, our house is kind of everything is sort of all bundled together, so our bedroom where the baby sleeps and my office have no closable door between the two.
Okay.
So we're going to move.
Yeah. Need a separate spot.
Cause that's not healthy either.
No. I find babies to be very poor writing partners.
But they laugh at all your jokes.
They do, but they have a difficult time thinking about story. They get distracted very easily.
That's true.
Your movie would just be a lot of
Object permanence.
They're not very good with that either.
And that ruins plots.
Exactly. You're trying to explain a car.
It's like, you know, the keys. They found the keys. What keys?
Yeah. What is keys? Playtime. Playtime. I mean, is there anything that you can tell, even just in the last couple of years, that you've learned from your first child that you have said, all right, I'm going to do this or not do this with the second one?
Okay, high chair for eating.
All right, good idea.
Okay. We tried to be, hey, yeah, we're just going to let him eat when he wants to eat. And now the house is just covered in hummus.
Oh, sure.
So, you know, I think that's definitely a lesson learned. And just trying to be a little bit stricter,
yep.
I think, than we've been. We've been kind of very, very flexible about everything. You want to poop? Yeah, poop. Poop wherever you want.
Yeah. Hey, man.
Eat where you want.
Free country.
Yeah. Hey, come on, man. Hey.
You're a person too, man.
We're all just human beings, man.
But I do.
So we'll work on that.
You know, it does seem like, I don't know why I'm thinking about this parallel, but it seems like I think people do need some sort of structure.
Yeah.
People need to know. They just want some type of a road to know, like, how to, that's why I say, like, oh, I don't know if I could, if someone just said, make whatever you want, I go, I need a little bit of structure.
Right.
But also, even thinking about, in talking of futurism, like, you know, VR as a storytelling device, like, you can't.
So where are you with that? Because I loved Lawnmower Man. I thought it was
Lawnmower Man was ahead of its time.
I love Jaron Lanier and the whole, oh my God, VR is the future.
Yes.
Now it's kind of here. I'm not as excited as I used to be.
No, because I think, you know, VR is very much a closed experience. And, you know, they just weren't really thinking. Augmented reality is really, you know, and different versions of augmented reality are more interesting. Because with VR, it's like you have to be in one place. You have to put on all this equipment.
Yeah.
You can't, as a storyteller, I just think not everything needs to be in VR. Maybe sporting events, maybe a concert or something. But as far as a storytelling device, I still think people need to know where to look.
Yeah, absolutely. No. Yeah, you have to be able to direct the story. You have to be able to tell them, okay, this is going to be really important, so let's just have a little glance at this before, you know, we go off onto this adventure that you want to do. And I think as soon as you start forcing people to do stuff, it's not really, I guess it's not VR anymore. It's something else.
Yeah, but it is. But I even as recently as 2 years ago, everyone was clamoring to make VR this and that.
Yeah.
And I'm not sensing any of that anymore. No. It's just the idea is too cumbersome. But I think there's a great, I don't know if you follow the Futurism account on Instagram, but it's great.
No, I don't. I will now. Though.
But they just said, I think that maybe it was HTC or Samsung. Just made like a fully contained VR head unit.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's still just.
Well, the idea that it's like, oh, it'd be like you're actually at a concert. It's like, but you still have to look in one direction, and like, you're going to look at the people next to you enjoying the
while
show?
Watching One Direction?
Yeah.
Come on.
I will not. Up top, my friend. Here we go.
Let's do it. Not. Thanks, Jonah.
I didn't do that.
Oh, buddy. Another one?
No, come on.
It's audio. They don't know that. That's not you.
Now do that with your hand.
Do that with those.
Every time, this is my thing. If someone like put up your high five, if someone wants a high five, you can't leave them hanging. That's not a good thing to do. Yeah. But you don't respect the joke or what they just said. You just backhand it.
Oh, that's not bad. Can I show you mine? Here, hold up your hand. You wipe it. Because it feels really gross. It gives like a very negative kind of.
Just poke your finger and go just.
Yeah.
Boop.
Yeah. Anything but don't get like you touch it so that they can retract.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Put it down.
That's the loophole. Yeah. That's the loophole. So let's see. February. It's almost March now. Oh, so almost any time you could be a dad in like starting in a couple of weeks.
Oh yeah, and we're gonna try and make it happen early because it just seems like it's worth getting done.
Yeah, good.
get on with
it. Who needs all the fanfare, all the anticipation of life being made?
We get it. You're a fetus. Come on, let's get on with it.
Come on.
Let's get out of here.
Nice to go.
Yeah.
Hospitals are expensive. In and out.
How much time will you need? Are you ready to sell this other project? Or do you need any more time to percolate on
it? Well, I'm trying to make sure that whatever it is we do next it will be based here where we're living so that I can work somewhat from home.
Yeah.
I think that'll make a big difference. So, you know, that's going to be a big deciding factor in whatever I do next.
Are people shooting stuff in Los Angeles again?
Not a lot, but if, you know, I'm trying to be clever about it and come up with something that would be doable in that way. But I don't know. I haven't come up against the wall on that one yet.
Is it that astronomically higher to shoot in Los Angeles? And if so, what is it that...
Well, there's no tax not many tax rebates. There's something called a lottery here. So there are some tax rebates, but only some people get them.
Oh, Jesus.
So it all seems a little...
It's like the school system here.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't know. I don't know how that lottery is run. I don't know who decides who wins the lottery.
Super fairly, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
No doubt about that.
No doubt.
But, you know, I think, you know, one would... You hope that if we do decide to make something here, maybe we'll be able to get in on some of that sweet, you know, tax rebate action.
Right.
Otherwise, yeah, it's going to be expensive to shoot here. So
I mean, it would seem to me... And again, I'm not a government person, so what do I know? But it would seem to me that they should be trying to lure... Because... you know, obviously, Vancouver sucked a lot of business out of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And now Atlanta is like a mini Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
It is a ton of stuff shoots there.
Yeah.
And it just seems like there's just not going to be a ton left.
What was that great film, the one that Jake Gyllenhaal did a few years ago where he plays a journalist and
Nightcrawler.
Nightcrawler. Yeah. I think that was an LA-based movie.
Yeah, it seems like. I mean, I think
it
the
felt
location
so
was.
LA. It did. Think about it. So it must be possible, at a certain budget, you know, that you can do those things.
What made it feel like L.A.? Were they just talking about traffic in the movie the whole time?
Yeah, they were talking about the movie traffic and how it personified L.A.
while sitting in traffic.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Everyone was wearing Rams hats.
That's what it was. Is that what that LA. Is?
Yeah, I think so.
Is that a Ram? Is that a sportsy thing?
It's a sportsy.
Are you a football fan?
A little bit, you know, I'm just getting into it, dipping my toe.
Just to see how it feels?
Yeah.
Is it?
I feel jockish.
I almost the other day had a sense of why it would be interesting. Where I was like, wait a minute. If you're a coach, you're really kind of like moving these chess pieces around a board. Yeah. And the other guy's got his... And I sort of was like, oh! And then I lost it. Like, I almost had it.
So close.
I was so close. I'm like, no. And also, I just feel like it's too late in life to just... get absorbed in a lifestyle. Like, I feel like...
You have to be. You don't have to dive into everything.
I think 15 years of sobriety would suggest otherwise. I think...
The cold turkey sobriety.
I think the alcoholic lizard brain that lives at the core of my being.
This is your thing now.
Yeah, 100%. Lydia comes home and there's just a million... Although Lydia's way... It's like she...
I don't know. I think she's in the kitchen, but
it's like that Key and Peele shit.
She'll go through these phases where it's like all of a sudden, like 30 survival kits will show up.
Oh yeah,
I'm like, what the fuck? And she was like, well, I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
So now we have enough food for like 4 years. If there were 12, like she's calculated.
Deanna's like that too. If I can't ever think of a present for my wife, I just get her like
like a knife or a survival kit or just something that like was
really
yeah.
And these then are good gifts.
She loves them.
Okay, yeah.
it's like this oh here's the thing know. That purifies water. She's like oh you know
because we can survive the apocalypse.
Yeah, exactly.
Together.
Yeah,
life straws.
Yeah,
life straws.
Life straws? Oh, yeah.
You want to go to the life straws. You can stick it in anything, and it just becomes drinkable water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a body. Baby?
Like a baby.
Like a straw and a baby.
Yeah, a life nipple. You just put a nipple on anything, and you fucking suck on it. Whoa, why? Why? Why
really aggressive.
Why go that way? Yeah. What are you... This is something... Because, you know, I appreciate the fact that spreading positivity is very important to you. And what is something that you're... extra happy or joyful about at the moment? It could be anything. It doesn't have to be work related. Like, what's something that you kind of, you know, is your little happy, chewy joy center?
Oh, man. Oh, how depressing it would be if it was just food. But really,
I like that your brain went to food before your child.
Oh, he likes food too. You know, we share. Yeah,
that's the thing. We get along that way.
Yeah, we have a lot in common then. Gosh, that's really hard.
It can be food.
I mean, yeah, food is always great. You know, hugs.
Hugs are great.
Hugs are amazing.
Yeah.
You know, wife hugs and baby hugs, they make the day good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's that would be my go-to one, I have to say, honestly. Hugs are great.
Do you just kind of, have you been thrown up on a lot?
Oh, I've had the works. Yeah, yeah.
The Cornetto trilogy. Yeah.
The Supreme. The throw-ups, the poops, the peas, the snots. The everything and then those things getting in weird places, getting like all over his hair. He has quite long hair. We haven't cut it, you know, so he's kind of got the Samson hair, and it's covered in hummus, and a lot of hummus right now. He loves hummus. Guacamole and hummus is kind of his thing.
Nice.
So
you are totally, were you always immune to that, or did it happen quickly?
What, as far as being able to deal with it?
Yeah.
Oh no, I'm totally fine with it. I never got kind of, I think my wife was actually more kind of, it was a bigger change from like finding all of that stuff kind of icky to being okay with it. I think I was okay with it. I mean, I've always been okay with it, but now I'm starting to get kind of bothered by it. So I'm always cleaning up.
Right.
You know, it's like wherever he goes, like, wipe this up. Why'd you leave that there? Why is there hummus on this?
You told me I could shit anywhere I want. That's very strong language for a toddler.
Never said I was consistent.
Well, that's the thing is that I imagine you can have very rigid ideas about this is the type of parent I'm going to be.
Yeah.
And then I imagine no matter what you think, it just gets all shattered to a million pieces and you just have to conform to whatever. The child is kind of like, oh, no.
I guess
this is the experience.
I'm desperately waiting for language to really kick in with him. Because I think when he can start talking, I think it's going to be so – I'm hoping it's going to be so much more fun.
Right.
That you can start – you know, teaching him things and discussing stuff and saying, oh, you should really see this and look at that painting. Isn't that cool? Or like, look at this house. Isn't it amazing? And just like talk about stuff.
Yeah.
It's going to be really fun.
He's two now?
He's just over 1.5.
Oh, wow.
So he's still got a ways to go. He's like, you know, another half a year or a year before we're talking.
Oh, man.
I think.
But I imagine it just goes like that.
Yeah. How many of those can you do? It goes just like...
Yeah, I was thinking of
that.
I was looking at. I was just on the Tesla website, just like, oh, look at Teslas, you know, why not? Look at Teslas.
The Tesla truck.
There's a Tesla truck, but then there's also some super snazzy sports car coming out.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw the thing, and I was like, put your deposit now. It comes out in 2020. I'm like, that's forever. Oh, that's not that far, actually. That is not that far.
Are you tempted?
At all. I am a little tempted.
You haven't got one yet.
You know, the only reason I didn't is because when I got my car, there was, you know, the Teslas were, it's a lot of upgrades to get like the battery package that is better.
To make it worth it.
So then if you upgrade the battery package, then you can't just plug it into, you have to put in a special charging station.
Yeah, but I'm sure you have that. Do you have a gas or electrical, I'm sure you have the right plug.
Well, we don't park in the garages here.
That's right.
But I'm just holding out that when the next couple of years, inductive charging mats There's no reason besides technology that we do not have inductive charging mats for cars yet.
I always thought like hot switching batteries would be a fast way to get your charges done, but I guess the batteries are a little huge.
They're a little huge. Yes,
you look slide inside, one out, stick another one in.
It's the base of your car. Yeah, it'd be difficult to swap that out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still stressed all the time with my battery life, just because it's really random. Where sometimes I'll have it plugged in all night, and then I'll like start driving around, and be like, yeah, it's 30 miles left. I'm so far
just,
from home.
You can't just pull into a station.
Yeah, then I have to look on an app and like go to like the zoo or somewhere in Glendale
to charge up.
Yeah, and then there's always some asshole that just plugged in.
Yeah, fuck that guy for just being a guy who's in the same situation you are.
In that situation, yeah, he is an asshole.
I guess that's true.
Yeah. But then it's like, or sometimes you'll plug in and someone will come and it's like, how much longer you got? And
oh,
then,
really? Yeah. Do they do that?
Yeah, and then I'll always lie and say, I got to drive to the west side, man. They go, I totally get it. Yeah.
So
it's a weird culture, the electric car plug-in people.
So just the recharge efficiency, I think, just needs, we're just like a hair away from fast charging. And then once that happens, then I like you, I would be so stressed all the time that I was just going to run out of charge.
Yeah, you plan your day differently. It's like I figured out a way to plug in because I park on the street outside of my house, and so but I have like a cord running over like from the top of my fence over to a foam pole, and I go down the foam pole, and then I plug in like on the street. But it's like if I can't get that spot, if it's already taken, then I have to like make sure – I have to look at my next day and go, okay, got to be here then. So I'll go to that one in Glendale and then I'll walk and get coffee while it's charging. You kind of start to plan your day a bit differently.
Bringing this back kind of full circle, have you guys ever watched the show Fully Charged online?
No.
God, it's great. You got to watch it. It's Crichton from Red Dwarf.
Okay.
Robert Llewellyn. He does this show, and it's all about what is the latest technology in electric cars or micro power generation. It's all just kind of clean energy stuff, focusing a lot on the cars, but also on other things. And it's amazing. It's a really good show, and it's like it's just online, so you can get it on YouTube.
I am totally in.
He's got a Patreon for it, and it's terrific. There's normally like sometimes two episodes a week.
What else are you watching that you like?
Have you heard of the Game of the Thrones?
So the Thrones are in some type of a match.
It's a sport. It's another sports show.
What are the Thrones playing?
Is it that, but I'm trying to think of anything else. Halt and Catch Fire.
I finally
caught up with that. I sort of watched the first couple of seasons, then got too busy, and finally caught up with the last couple of seasons of that. And I guess that's over now.
I think it is.
But that was great. I really enjoyed that. And Lee Pace is that he's fantastic as well. I really liked him. Is it Lee Pace?
I think it is Lee Pace. Yeah.
Big tall dude. Tall dude.
Yeah. You got a type.
I do.
You like the big tall dudes.
Yeah, I do the big tall dudes. So,
So when does, by the time this goes up next week, when does Mute go?
Friday.
When does it go live?
23rd. 23rd?
24th, so it's 23rd. Up right now.
Today's 21st.
Mute is up right now.
Yes.
You should definitely watch it. It's directed by Duncan, co-written by Duncan. You got a Skarsgård in there, and a bunch of amazing Paul Rudd with a great mustache. Was it a real? Did he really grow?
Yeah, he grew that.
Holy shit!
Yeah, he can do everything.
He really can. He legitimately can do everything, and he's also one of the funniest people in the one-on-one is also one of the funniest. Yeah,
I hate him.
Yeah, I know, it's fucking bullshit. No one should be that talented. That's not fair.
He's 73 years old.
He looks great. He looks fantastic. And also, he's a superhero, too. He got to be a superhero. He does everything. But Mute, Duncan, thank you so much for coming back on.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks for coming to my house. I'll show you some toys. I'm going to show you around. I'm going to show you some toys. Do you have a lot of toys at home?
No, I don't.
Do you keep
it for your child?
Nope. The kid plays with hummus.
Exactly. What more do you need? Keys, hummus.
I don't know why I expected that you would have like a collection of something or other.
No, I'm not a collector.
Gah.
Yeah.
But I admire those who are.
Did we
nice save?
Did we determine that you were going to call the Rockwell trilogy or
the bells? The three bells. The three bells.
Three bells. And what's the next one called? What's the next movie called?
I can't tell you that. It has a great title.
God damn it.
It starts with an M.
Moon Monkey. Moon Mute and
Moon.
Monkey.
The kid named it.
All right. Enjoy your burrito, everyone. The end.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.